Welcome everyone to Planet FM, a sports review. And I have to say, we're just having a few technical issues. What a typical start to the year, but one of the microphones isn't working, and who's ever on them, they should really be actually letting me know this, but nobody has. But so just give us a bit more music and we'll just try and sort out that problem. Okay, everyone, welcome back to the Sports Review here on Planet FM. If you listen 104.6 FM, or if you're listening on planetaudio.org.nz, and we've got a great show lined up. We will be having a word to our Mr. McNeice about the FA Cup and all things football, and as well, he's back. The man, the legend, Mark Watson, will be back. But we're going to start off with a sport which has gained popularity. Is possibly the most popular sport in New Zealand. You go around any small town in New Zealand, there is more basketball courts than there is rugby posts. And when you speak about basketball, you speak about legendary teams in New Zealand, not only the New Zealand Breakers, but you speak about teams like the Wellington Saints, the Canterbury Rams, the Auckland Stars, so many of them, the Waikato Pistons, the Hawke's Bay Hawks. These are some of the legendary teams. And when you speak about the name Mills and Wellington, there's two things, hospitality and basketball. And I'm proud to have on the line is a former New Zealand NBL player in his own right. He's also the chief executive officer of the Wellington Saints, and he's going to be giving us all our basketball. He's going to be our basketball expert, and he's going to give us a lot of basketball input. Please welcome to the show, Jordan Mills. Jordan, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you. And, of course, this Sunday, the Australian NBL basically kicks off. And, of course, the Breakers in their first game, they've got the Perth Wildcats, who are the defending NBL champions. Just your thoughts on the Breakers. Obviously, they will not have any home games, they're pretty much going to be based in Australia. Can they make the playoffs?
Oh, 100%. I think they've recruited extremely well. They've obviously brought in a couple of good locals, and Ty Webster, Corey's little brother, who's been playing in Europe for the past couple of years, and he's an extremely talented point guard. They've also brought in two-time first-team All-NBL import Lamar Patterson, who's had a lot of success in the Australian League with the Brisbane Bullets. Their second import, Colton Iverson, no one's really sure how he'll go, but he's got a good pedigree, so he's got the potential to be good. And then you add that with their great New Zealand core of the Finn Delaney's, the Tom Abercrombie's, the Corey Webster's. They're extremely dangerous.
Oh, they certainly are. And, of course, Dan Shamir, if you look at Dan Shamir's CV, he would be one of the most, on paper, possibly the best coach that's come to the Breakers, with his record in the Israeli League, and he's had spells in Russia, so he's very experienced with the European game. And of course, last season was a bit of a tough year for the Breakers. They had a lot of problems on the court and quite a few off the court with some of their imports. So yeah, so it's going to be quite interesting. As a basketball expert, Jordan, where do you think the Breakers' strengths are going to be?
Definitely in their guard lineup. I think they've got obviously the Webster brothers and Lamar Patterson, as I mentioned. I think those three are possibly the best backcourt guys in the entire league. They may have a little bit of trouble up front with the likes of Melbourne United, who are really strong in their forward positions, with them just signing possibly one of the best Australians outside the NBA, Doc Landale, who's signed with Melbourne. I think he's an NBA type player, and they're extremely lucky to have him. So I think their strengths lie in their guards, which is always a positive thing, because guards control the tempo and how they want to play. They haven't played well in preseason yet the Breakers, but you know, pre-season's only a small snippet of things to come. So, you know, I'm confident that they'll be there or thereabouts in the top four and have a shot to win the title at the end of the season.
Yeah, of course, when we speak about the import, Lamar Patterson, he's been the most, he's been an NBL All-Star a number of times and really comes with some great pedigree. And with the Australian NBL, Jordan, who, is it going to be the usual suspects there, like your Perth Wildcats, your Sydney Kings, Will Cairns, Taipans that have all traditionally been good teams, and possibly Melbourne United? Are you picking someone that could actually surprise out of the NBL teams?
Well, I'm definitely Melbourne United. I think on paper, are 100% the favourites. They've got the strongest team, top to bottom. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go the whole way in a long season with a lot of games. Illawarra might be the one that might shake things up a little bit. They've got Brian Gorgian and his coach, who's probably the most legendary coach in Australian history. He's recruited well as well. He's got a couple of good imports. So I think if there's a team that's going to possibly shake things up, it'll be the Illawarra Hawks with Brian Gorgian at the helm.
Yeah, and of course the big thing about the Australian NBL is with the imports, and I think the imports each year, I've been following since the Breakers got in, the imports have just got that much better. That they come with a lot 100%. Of European experience, some with some really good NBA experience.
Yeah, I think that's the league over the past 5 or 6 years has really taken an upward swing. Not only with imports, but also with the quality of locals that are coming back, like the likes of Andrew Bogut, who's obviously retired now, but played the last couple of seasons with Sydney. Now Jock Landale with Melbourne United. In the past, you wouldn't see these high quality Australians playing in the Australian League, which is a showing of how good their league's got and how high quality is around the world.
Yeah, and of course with the COVID factor, a lot are seeing Australia as probably a good destination to actually have a good professional term within a basketball league.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's still a lot of unknown about the Australian League right this second. I mean, they released the first five rounds of their schedule about a month ago, and now they've changed it, and now it's just the first week of the season, so there's still a lot up in the air. Hopefully that clears up and we can get a lot of basketball going on, but it's just been changing by the minute.
Yeah, and of course that's the old COVID factor at the moment, Jordan. We just don't know, and obviously we wait with tender hooks that New Zealand doesn't go into another lockdown.
So, 100%.
I think this new variant of COVID is a real worry to us. And of course we have the NBA, and of course your old mate and of course New Zealander Stephen Adams. He's at the New Orleans Pelicans, and he's playing really good basketball at the moment. Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably playing the best basketball of his career so far. He obviously had his first career triple-double a few days back, which is an absolute rarity for a centre. To get that, there's only a couple of centres in the league that can get the triple-doubles. So that's really impressive of how far he's grown as a player, and his passing is probably the thing that's been the most impressive for me of the season so far. They're a really, really good young team, the Pelicans, and I think they've got a lot of growing to do. So their future is really bright. So hopefully Steve can continue to be a part of that.
Yeah, but by the looks of it, Jordan, he looks like he's basically going to be a huge part of that team. And, of course, they're possibly building the team around Stephen at this time. With the NBA, I know it's really early at this stage, but who are the teams that have really stood out to you in the Eastern Conference?
In the East, there's a couple of teams that have been impressive in the East. Their record doesn't 100% reflect it, but Boston Celtics have been playing really good basketball. Them and the Brooklyn Nets are kind of the two teams that I think could be the ones that come out of the East. The Milwaukee Bucks have started a little bit slow with Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I expect them to be there or thereabouts come playoff time. So the Brooklyn Nets and the Boston Celtics with their kind of duos with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have been super impressive at Boston. And then obviously the return of Kevin Durant at Brooklyn's been spectacular after a serious injury. It looks like he's never missed a game.
Yeah, of course, the Brooklyn Nets now. Sean Marks is the general manager there still?
That's correct. Yeah, he's done an absolutely amazing job since taking over the Nets. And they've got a new head coach, the former two-time MVP, Steve Nash, in his first coaching gig.
Oh, wow.
And he's been great so far as well.
Yeah, well, of course, this probably needs to be a make-or-break year for Brooklyn. Of course, having Kevin Durant there, you know, this guy is an absolute legend of the game. Just in the Western Conference, what's some of your thoughts on them? Who are the teams that you believe will shine out? Obviously, you have the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. Any other teams that you think that can really shake it up a bit?
I mean, the Clippers haven't been playing good basketball, but they have the talent level and the ability to potentially lift and give the Lakers a crack just due to the talent they have on their team. The Lakers have retooled and re-strengthened from their championship a few months ago, and they look a lot better as well. LeBron James is pretty ageless. He still keeps doing it on a nightly basis at 36 years old, which is crazy to me, but he's still leading the league in everything he does. But outside the Clippers, I'm not, you know, I think the Lakers are going to be a really tough beat in a seven-game series. I don't think the Warriors have enough without Klay Thompson out. I don't think they've got the talent to mess with them in a seven-game series.
Yeah, well, they certainly didn't. Of course, I watched Steph Curry against the Clippers. God, he was amazing, wasn't he?
Oh, he's definitely come right. He started off a bit slow and people were criticising him. And then he went boom and had a 60-point game against the Trailblazers, and he's been firing ever since, which is awesome to see.
It certainly is. Now, well, closer to home, of course, the New Zealand NBL, of course, the Saints will have a side in the New Zealand NBL this year.
Yes. So our season starts April 24th, which we're really looking forward to. To not only putting basketball back on in New Zealand, but for our home fans here in Wellington, they've missed out for well over a year now, almost 2 years. So they're all itching to get some live basketball and some good quality basketball here in Wellington, and so are we. So we're really excited to defend our NBL title and hopefully put on a good show for the fans. So it'll be a different season to what people are used to, in terms of a lot of the AMBL guys potentially be unavailable. But look, we're really excited. We're hoping that we can get American imports into the country, which we're going through the process of at the moment, which will be a huge input for our league to get it stronger.
And of course, the big thing about the New Zealand NBL is that it gives young New Zealanders an opportunity to be in that window for many, say, the Australian NBL or for other professional leagues as well, too.
For sure, and that's what we're building on this year. We've got a couple of young Wellington locals who we think have the potential to play in the AMBL, so this will be a good tester for them to get better throughout the season and show that they can do that and get seen. We've seen, you know, there's 18. New Zealanders or New Zealand NBL participants playing in the Australian NBL this season, so there's a lot of them that are new in their first season over there, so that's a kind of good showing for us that we can get guys better and improve them so they can take the next step and play in the Australian League.
Yeah, of course, one of the interesting names, like obviously Jordan Nartai, Vojinovic, and of course Max Darling. Now that's a guy that many people have rated very, very highly as well too.
For sure. So we haven't seen Max in this side of the world for the last couple of years. He played for the Canterbury Rams as an 18-year-old in 2018, and he's been in Europe ever since. So it'll be really exciting. He's with Illawarra with Brian Gorgian, so it's really exciting to see his progression. I think he's 21 now, or 20 or 21, so he's still extremely young. So it'll be really exciting to see his progression as a player, and he's obviously shown a huge amount of talent as a young player, so hopefully he grows and gets better for us as well.
It certainly does, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, Jordan, but just with the Australian NBL, once, hopefully in a few years' time, and it may take this long, once the COVID issues are over and we do have some sort of trans-Tasman, do you believe we need a second team? Yeah, hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hello? 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 What's happened here? Hello? Can you hear me now, Jordan?
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Hello, Jordan. Can you hear me? Okay, we're just going to go to a bit of music. We look like there is some technical issues, or whether it's at my end or whether it's at... we might be at Jordan. Jordan, can you hear me? Okay. Okay, sorry, everyone. There seems to be some issues here at the moment, so I'm going to have a quick look at this. Next up, we'll have Brendan McNeice, so I really apologise. So let's play a bit of music. We've got some good Kiwi music on it. I can tell you something. Who's ever picked the hit list really needs a pat on the back, because it's all Kiwi music, so it's, like, fantastic. So we'll just put on a bit of music.
Dream.
Well, welcome everyone back to the Sports Review. We just had to change a few microphones there, so I hope everyone's listening and they can hear me out there. And so we do apologise, but hey, these things happen on the big jobs, and not to worry because it is Monday. And Chorley or Crawley, not Brendan?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'm just thinking there you had 6 months at Leaky Boat. Have the Finn brothers been out training with the British America's Cup entry?
Possibly.
Well, quite possibly, quite possibly. It's been all happening in the FA Cup, and some of the results coming through, and what about Crawley Town 3-0?
Oh, that's probably bigger than the Chorley. It's Crawley and Chorley, bigger than the upset over Derby County, because
Derby County, including Wayne Rooney, have all got COVID.
I know. Apparently, a friend of mine. Now he's a Derby. Well, he claims to be a Derby supporter. I'm not going to name him, but you know, he's a Derby supporter from Lincoln. So I've never heard of that. But it's worse than a Manchester United supporter from Auckland. But who knows what that is? But he just said that the Derby side that played Crawley, the average age was about 18 to 19. They put an academy side out there.
Two of the players got dropped off by their mums at the stadium. That's true.
I have 14 new players for Derby, and of course before that, the odds were saying William Hills were given. The Crawley fans and players were inspired by Adele singing before them. Imagine having that. Imagine if we had somebody famous singing before the Phoenix when we get games back. And, of course, inspire them to a good victory over Derby. But Leeds United, that Crawley result, and, of course, there were a few shockers in the FA Cup, weren't there?
Oh, absolutely. But there's a brilliant football writer who writes for the Sporting Life, and he actually, believe it or not, tipped Crawley Town to beat Leeds at 8-1, and Crawley Town were at home. But on the basis that Leeds would be concentrating on staying in the Premier League, and Crawley, who are in League Two or the old Fourth Division,
yep,
have been in tremendous form. They've been in tremendous form, and he didn't predict 3-0, but he predicted they'd win, and this now goes to show you how some of the luster, I suppose, Eamon, has been taken off the FA Cup, because when I was a lad in the 70s, there were some classic FA Cup games when the FA Cup itself was held in just as high esteem as the league title.
There certainly was, and you probably look at some of the finals, like the first final that was probably shown on New Zealand TV would have been Sunderland beating the almighty Leeds, which were coached by Don Revie at the... Don Revie.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. That was the first game ever in colour in New Zealand. I remember watching it, and the lead side of that team, Johnny Giles, Billy Bremner, Norman Hunter, Peter Lorimer, and here's a name you don't get in modern football, Sniffer Clark.
Alan Clark.
Yeah, old Sniffer, yeah.
Sniffer Clark.
you wouldn't get that in 2020.
No.
If we're looking back in that game, everybody remembers the Ian Porterfield goal, but I suppose people don't really remember as well. There was a string of outstanding saves from Jimmy Montgomery, the Sunderland keeper.
Yep. Yeah, there certainly was, and I think, as I said, that was more, they said, it was just as important as Ian Porterfield goal, who Ian Porterfield, I think, went to manage a few First Division sides, and I don't know whatever happened to Jimmy Montgomery.
I remember the manager, Bobby Stogel, running onto the pitch in the end in his Trilby hat, and It was an amazing experience, and if that didn't give you a love for football, that's I suppose it gave me a love for football that has stayed with me for the rest of my life. That you know, the underdog can win, and does win in football. And like you know, the FA Cup has got some tremendous memories for me. I remember you sent me a message of one about the goalkeeper eating the meat.
Yeah, the reserve goalkeeper at Sutton. There was a bet that had eaten a pie on the... I think, who was it? It might have been Paddy Power had a bet. They just said then it was like a 30-1 thing that I'd eat a pie. And, of course, a few of his mates put a fiver on and he ate a pie on the bench. I think he got suspended for a while.
I think he did. Oh, yeah. You could imagine that, like the corporate sponsorship opportunities with Big Ben and you know, and that's at the other end of the scale. And then, of course, this one will be close to your heart, Eamon. You know, if you're going down memory lane with the FA Cup yep. final, then the 1977 FA Cup final, 24th of May.
Yep, at Liverpool.
Manchester United 2, Liverpool 1.
Yep,
what
a game! And they weren't. And they had. If they'd done the stats now, you probably would have found that Liverpool had about 95% of the play, and Manchester United had 5% of the play.
That was a super Liverpool team, you know. Yeah. You know, the likes of Emlyn Hughes, Jimmy Gase, Steve Highway. Like that was some team. And Manchester United, as you quite rightly said, got two opportunities and took them with Stuart Pearson and Jimmy Greenough. The Greenough one was a deflection off a Lou McCary's shot.
Yeah, it was. Lou McCary still claims he scored the goal. But yeah, you talk about FA Cup finals. What about the crazy gang of 88?
Of course, we're going to give Liverpool a bit of stick.
it's Liverpool crap today, mate.
That game, the 1977 FA Cup final, was played on the 24th of May on the Saturday.
Yeah.
On the Wednesday night, Liverpool had to fly to Rome, the Olympic Stadium in Rome, and take on Borussia Mönchengladbach in the European Cup final. And they went and stopped them 3-1 and won the European Cup, you know. And the thing is that there wasn't even mention in those days of the players being tired or there was too much travel. In those days, they'd have been on 100 quid a week, maybe, or something like that. And it just goes to show you. But there's a lot of myths around. If you actually believe in what you're doing and pulling on the jersey, you'll do it for nothing. You'll do it for pride. And you know, and so fair play to Liverpool. And Emlyn Hughes was the captain, and he lifted them off the floor after getting beaten by United at Wembley, and they went to Rome and won the European Cup. So I think fair play to them in a matter of 3 days.
Yeah, and of course we speak about the crazy gang of Wimbledon with the likes of the Vinnie Joneses and the John Fashanews and Laurie Sanchez goal. But I was just going to and they were the unlikely side. Of course, Dave Besson, I think he saved a penalty from John Aldridge in that final.
He did indeed. He did indeed. And the thing about it was that. That game in 1988 was one of the last games they ever played at Wembley with the all standing at the both ends.
Yeah.
And of course that's what gives the FA Cup final its unique atmosphere was that you would have 30,000 or 40,000 at each end standing. With their colours and all the rest of it, I defy anybody when the players come onto the pitch and you just see that wall of colour at both ends of the stadium. That there's virtually nothing in sport that rivals it. And then of course when they bring in the all seater, what do they call it, the football passion killer, and it just doesn't have the same atmosphere or vibrancy. So that was that was one of the last FA Cup finals ever played with the standing. And of course, Wimbledon were no bad side. Like, you don't win the FA Cup if you're a bad side, as you quite rightly said, Eamon. Dave Bessenden goal, he didn't just save that penalty. He made about another half a dozen crucial saves. They had Vinnie Jones, Dennis Wise, John Fashanu, Laurie Cunningham. You know, like, this side was no mugs. And do you remember who scored the goal for them?
Laurie Sanchez. He went on to manage Northern Ireland, and he also went to manage Fulham in the Premiership.
Absolutely. You're bang on the mark. And that was a fantastic game of football. And you know, like I sort of miss those old FA Cups, but we have what we have now, and of course. You know, in modern football, since the last time we talked, there's been another upset. Southampton beating Liverpool in the Premier League.
And guess what happens on Wednesday, mate? I know it may not be a given. Guess who's going top, baby? Well, you know, Brendan. You know it, Brendan.
Manchester United travel to Burnley. Is this what you're alluding to?
Yes, that's right. But I have as well, and I know a lot of people, friends of mine who are Manchester United supporters, will hate me saying it, is that I really think the noisy neighbours are the ones to watch Manchester City.
Yes. There's no doubt about that. And like, if they win their games in hand, Eamon, they, you know, Manchester City will go top, and they're very, very dangerous. And I'll make another assumption, is that even in this crazy year, is that, like, if you look at City's next games, it's against Brighton and Crystal Palace, you know, I hesitate to say this, but they should win them.
You never know. Just one thing. The league's getting a bit, is getting away from Celtic. I know they've got Hibs tomorrow, but 22-point lead. I know they've got four games in hand.
Normal service will resume in due course. I think I've got problems with my microphone.
Good on you. Thanks a lot. Well, when's normal transmission going to resume? 2022?
2022, normal transmission will resume. The Scottish Premiership is over. Even Rangers won't bugger it up from here. She's all over Red Rover. And it'll just be a question now of limiting the damage and seeing what we can do. I can't see Celtic bringing anyone in January, and there'll just be a rethink over summer to see a reset and see where Celtic go from here. But clearly the season hasn't been good enough. Europe is our benchmark. Glasgow derbies are our benchmark, and we failed in both of those.
Yep, and talking about, I watched Phoenix at the weekend, and while a really terrible decision made by VAR and the referee sending off Alex Rufer, it was the most appalling decision I've seen in the A-League. The Phoenix looked okay, but that's all I'm saying. They looked okay. There were some good signs that came out of it. I was quite... Clayton Lewis is beginning to make a bit of a difference there. But really, and Cameron Devlin was very good. And I have to say that James McGarry, the son of legendary all-weight Michael McGarry, is really filling in that left-back slot left by Kadachi quite well, even though he's probably not the same sort of class as Kadachi, but it is doing well. But the Phoenix, while a one-all draw against McArthur Rams, they'll be happy with that, but they've probably got some concerns. Stefan Marinovic basically looked like he'd done a hamstring and might be out, so they'll be without him possibly for a couple of weeks.
There you go. I can understand, Eamon. I can understand a referee getting it wrong. He's only one view of it, and he's got a second to make his mind up. And you know, I can almost forgive a referee for any decision, but the VAR getting it wrong.
Oh, Yep. I could tell you something. There was a bit of naughty words from me. My neighbours might have heard me when I was watching that match. But that's what happens. And of course, next up, he's back. The man, the legend. The legend is back. Guess who's back after you? Mark Watson. Mark Watson.
Oh, sensational. Well, just before you go, is you know that there is the huge game of Liverpool and Manchester United in the Premier League next Sunday. So,
yes, I'm looking forward to that. I've got a few bets going on, a few Scouser mates, and they're going to basically be paying me, even though for the last few years I've been paying them. But that's going to be an interesting game. And, of course, the biggest factor is COVID, Brendan.
Absolutely. And it's just, it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. I've been talking to my brother and my friends back in Ireland and stuff, and people are actually starting to get to the end of their run. If you can cast your mind back to lockdown and how it was for us and coming to the end of lockdown, and it was very, very short for us, in relative terms. But I was getting to the stage where I was very, very toey. You can imagine what it's been like for those guys. They've been in lockdown in one sort of another for virtually a year now.
Yeah, and you know, and I hate to say it, we want to keep the show positive, but for goodness sake, if you're listening, the government, please keep our borders safe. Please keep our quarantine facilities safe, because it just takes one community case and we're in lockdown, mate.
We're in lockdown. And, you know, the thing is that we are so, so blessed here, and there's no other word for it, because, you know, like my brother was telling me, part of the Irish society is going out for a few bevvies and going to the pub and catching up with your mate.
You're joking me.
No. I speak the truth here, but I speak the truth. But the thing is that there was just about a tear in his eye when he was telling me that he can't go to the pub. it might sound a bit funny and
all right,
but that's their life.
It is indeed, and it's probably harder for them. Like we can sacrifice. Well, I know I can. I don't know about you, but you know, well, I can sacrifice and go on a job, and probably won't need a few of the dreaded drink over the lockdown. But it's pretty hard. It's hard for a lot of those businesses as well too. So we're in the best country in the world, and I'm going to say that. And you're probably listening to the best. And you're probably listening to the best sports show this in the world at the moment.
Okay. And you just keep taking the medication.
Brendan, it's always a pleasure talking to you. And we'll have to do it again. We'll have to do it again on next Monday. And
next Monday, when we know the result of the Liverpool United match.
Oh, mate. Yeah, you're going to see a lot of love from me, mate.
Okay. Well, you make sure that you transfer all that love to Mark Watson coming up, and we'll give him a good listen.
Oh, I tell you what, it's going to be great to have him back. It's great to have him back on air. He is the man, the legend. So, you have a great rest of the week, Brendan, and we'll catch you next week.
All the best, Evan. Good luck. Cheers.
Great having a chat as usual to Brenda McNeice. Well, next up is the man, the legend, that is Mark Watson. So we'll play a bit of music, and now we've got everything all sorted here. Have to say, the mic here is just fantastic, and hope everyone thinks it's a good listen today. So I'll just play a bit of music, and we'll get on to Mr. Watson next. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review here on Planet 104.6 FM, or if you listen on planetaudio.org.nz, and of course it's that part of the show, and he's back. And it's, I'm going to wish a happy new year to the man, the legend that is Mark Watson. Happy new year to you, Mark.
Good afternoon to you, Eamon. Happy new year to you.
And it's great to have you back, and I hope you've had a great Christmas break. And Mr. Summerfield is on self-imposed gardening leave. When I was talking to him, he was literally picking up stuff to do the garden because he's still on holidays. And but he will be joining us next week, and he said he'd made the comment. He said Watson will be on fire. He'll have a lot to say. But anyway, Mark, but it's great to have you back. And of course, a big thanks to Lee Piper as well, who filled in for Sean and Mark over the break. Hey, Mark, I have to say, well, I hope you've had a good break. And just looking at this year, 2021, what are some of your hopes for 2021? Sporting hopes?
Oh, look, I just think we want some normality, don't we? But I think that it just comes down to what happens with this COVID situation. Look, you know, I'm sort of quietly hoping the Olympic Games go ahead. I've got an opportunity up there as a commentator, and yep, that's the pinnacle of what I do, equally with the Paralympics as well. But I guess everything's sort of still on hold at the moment. I'm sort of enjoying sort of the cricket going on at the moment, but I've got to say I'm probably enjoying watching the Australia-India contest more than I've been sort of enjoying the New Zealand sort of Pakistan-West Indies, because I guess unlike others, I sort of had a little bit of an expectation that New Zealand would just whitewash both those sides here, and while Pakistan put up a little bit more of a fight than the West Indies, it's been fairly predictable. And I guess just going off on a tangent, moving away from your initial question, I've got to say, I think it's all very well jumping up and down and saying, hey, we're the number one test side in the world, but are we really? I mean, and let's be honest, if we went across to Australia now and played the Aussies in four or five tests, we'd get swept over there. If we went and played in India, we'd get swept over there. So I'm not sure why we jump up and down about these world rankings in cricket so much, because at the end of the day, you just want to win things, don't you? You just want to, you know, win those major test series away and have those sort of iconic moments. There's been a lot of comparisons drawn between, oh, this is the best cricket team we've ever had. Well, I mean, I still think the 1985 side that won in Australia, you'd have to say, is a better side, which featured the likes of Hadley, Reid, clearly Martin Crowe in that side as well, John Wright, all those wonderful players. So, you know, I think we just need to slow down a little bit in terms of getting overly excited. This team needs to learn to win away. In saying that, look, you know, I hope those opportunities do come and New Zealand cricket can sort of start performing overseas.
Yeah, well, you know, I have to say, I think it's on paper, it is possibly, if you look at it on paper, yeah, we are. But I think we don't want to get ourselves trapped into living into a false sense of security that we are the best. We possibly, we are competitive, but really when you look at it, and you know, I'd like to see us make the test final at the World Test Championship at Lord's, Mark. But, you know, we've got to be realistic that Australia, you know, you can say what you like about them, they tend to come back, and India, especially if you play them in India, they're going to be absolutely nearly impossible to beat. And of course, with COVID, you're not going to have the neutral umpires. You're going to have their umpires as well, too.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think if you look at it, you look at Pakistan and Australia last year, you look at the West Indies the year before, I mean, they're not the sides they once were. They're fairly sort of woeful teams at the moment, and I think England would be a real challenge for us. Clearly Australia and Australia is mentioned, and India and India. And look, even New Zealand touring to South Africa. So we can start winning or being, you know, really, really competitive. You know, losing a series or drawing a series 2-2 or losing a series 2-1, then I think we've just got to pull the reins in. And, you know, we love to jump up and down. But it's the same thing with the Kane Williamson. Look, I think he's been magnificent. Is he the best batsman in the world? Well, I mean, if you had to choose one, I'd still take Steve Smith, wouldn't you, in a heartbeat, I think, in terms of his ability to, you know, play right around the world and score hundreds. Who's the better-looking batsman? Clearly Kane Williamson. But look, it is good that we are winning, and we are winning well. It's good that we've got some depth coming through with the likes of Kyle Jamieson, who's, you know, since Vernon Philander out of South Africa, I don't think I've seen a guy with a better test start in terms of being a bowler. And so, look, when you go back to say, 10 years ago when I was on radio and I was really, really hard on our cricketers. You know, I always used to say that the definition of a warm-up for New Zealand cricket was a cigarette and the definition of a warm-down was a cold beer. And not a lot of in-between. And we used to always sort of hear potential, 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 sort of followed by the words retirement. It's actually nice to see that I think there has been a shift in the way they approach things. I think there's been a shift in the thinking. I think we've got depth of competition now. And so look, I think New Zealand cricket's definitely moving in the right direction.
Definitely is. Now, just one other thing. America's Cup, the Parada Cup starts this week. Just your opinion on it. We watched some of the pre-regattas, and of course, Team New Zealand won those pre-regattas. What's some of your thoughts on the America's Cup? And we won't mention the TV1 coverage, please.
Well, yeah, look, I think New Zealand will win this America's Cup comfortably. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think there's been a little bit of, you know, people talking about New Zealand losing starts and, you know, dropping a couple of races or dropping a race or finding themselves behind. I think there's strategy. I think there's reason. I think there's a lot of it's tactical. I think a lot of it's not putting all their cards on the table. I think it's seeing how they operate and deal with different crew under pressure as well. They're not going to get too many opportunities, so you probably want to go through a few more negative scenarios. I think Ben Ainslie, you know, arguably the greatest sailor in history, if you just look at his Olympic record, has pretty much come out and said the same thing, that Team New Zealand are by far the best boat there. And when it all comes down to it, they're not going to muck around come America's Cup time. They just want to win this. You know, they spend too many years trying to win it back. They've got it, and they want to, you know, and they want to put it away. In regards to the Challengers series, it starts to be a little bit difficult because you don't sense that the Brits are really in it. As much as they're trying to make some inroads, they can only do so much. They've clearly got a bit of a donkey or a bit of a lemon. So then it comes down to Prada versus the New York Yacht Club. And I think you've only got to have a look at the two skippers there. And I think the moment the pressure goes on, I've always said this, I don't believe Dean Barker's the right guy. So, look, I think it'll be the Italians versus the New Zealanders probably come the America's Cup time. But, you know, for all the fanfare around it, it is just disappointing that there are only three teams involved. And I guess just going back to the, you know, I've seen the New York Yacht Club and the Italians all coming out and talking about putting boats back in the water, i.e. let's go back to sort of a traditional sailing format if they do win it. Mm-hmm. And I've got to say I agree with that completely. I think the America's Cup is compelling no matter, you know, what the boats are. I don't think it's any more compelling because suddenly we've got these rocket ships travelling across the harbour at 100 kilometres an hour. I want to see full crews on these boats. I want to, when they run through the sailing crew, you want to see, oh, there's seven sailing world champions on board here and there's guys who've won the Whitbread. Where at the moment we've got, what, three sailors on board, cyclists, a rower, and the guys who are just, you know, I think Stephen Ferguson, former kayaker and swimmers, is part of that setup as well. So, yeah, I guess I'm a bit of a traditionalist and it'd be nice just to sort of see some sails coming up and down and a boat that might be sort of 1% or 2% down in performance, being able to make that up through just really good crew work.
Yeah, certainly. Well, and I tend to agree with you a bit, Mark, because it's like I've watched America's Cup like most people have when we go back to 86, 87, when we had the 12 metres. And, of course, when I'm speaking to Rod Davis, what has changed? The technology has changed. But, you know, when you had a guy like PJ Montgomery who could make a, which would be like watching paint dry into an exciting, and to excitement, that's something I really enjoyed. And I have to say, it's the analogy is like it would be like turning the Tour de France into a BMX race.
Absolutely, absolutely, it would be. I mean, you still want, you know, we still look at sailing. It's all very well to say, well, everything's moving to foiling, but young kids are still growing up and learning how to sail as an optimist, and there's a pathway for them through laser and all the rest of it. I mean, how many people actually have access at a young age to foiling type boats? And the strength of New Zealand sailing when we first won the America's Cup was the fact that we had guys who had won the Admiral's Cup, who had won the Kenwood Cup off Hawaii, you know, who had won P-Class World Championships right through to the Finns and right across the board. And with all of those different sailors and all that different knowledge, all that came and was put out on the table. And I think that's why we ended up having the expertise. And, you know, you want to make sure young guys can come through. But, yeah, oh, I don't know. It just becomes too much about the technology and, you know, and not enough about the actual sailors. And that's always been, I guess, my criticism to a degree sometimes with motorsport. I mean, if you're a really good driver in a really, really good car, you're going to beat an outstanding driver in an average car. And, you know, I always feel that it should just be purely the best drivers. And I still think there needs to be a much heavier weight in terms of just... yeah, the pure sailors. In regards to TV1's coverage, to be honest, I haven't really watched it. To be fair, I'm not going to lie, I struggle a little bit with Scotty Stevenson. I've got all the time in the world for Peter Lester. But, yeah, I just... I just sometimes worry that, you know, too many or sort of broadcasters and presenters just try and make it too much about themselves in what is arguably... Yeah. Arguably should just be really about the sport.
Yeah, you're dead right there, Mark. And getting back to America's Cup, we speak about it. One of the key things to America's Cup was to have the best match ratio. Like, you have a look at Team New Zealand when they used to have match racers like Rod Davis, like Chris Dixon, like the Russell Coutts, and then you have a look at some of the match racers like Jimmy Spittle, who's and Dean Barker and Ben Ainslie. These guys are renowned match racers, and then it would be interesting to see how Berlin would get on in a match race.
Yeah, look, I still think Berlin and Tukar by far. I mean, I was lucky enough to spend a bit of time with Peter Lester at this Olympics and spent a lot of time around Pete, and he'll say that Berlin and Tukar are just another level up. They're arguably the best sailors we've ever had. And so I do think they probably would be okay, but it'd be good to see guys like Barker and stuff put under great, how they would react under greater pressure if, you know, a little bit of equipment broke or, you know, suddenly someone threw a dummy tack in, and how you deal with that. And those good old things we used to see, and we really start to see, you know, we really start to see the mettle of these guys in the top 2 inches and who is the most composed and who doesn't panic.
That's one thing. Anything else that caught your eye over the summer break? Anything that you would I was just looking over the sporting week, and of course I haven't mentioned to you next Sunday it's Liverpool Manchester United.
Yeah, they've got some tough games coming up. Manchester United, Liverpool. I mean, and they've been disappointing actually. You know, they've played West Brom and they drew there. They played Newcastle, drew there, and then they ended up dropping points to Southampton in a loss. And yet somehow they're still sort of at the top of the table. And I think a lot of that's got to do with COVID. I think those bigger teams are really struggling at home. I think the crowds and stuff at Anfield do make a big difference for a team like Liverpool. And I think it has allowed for a lot of sides to win where arguably, I think in a more regular season with all the fanfare, perhaps they wouldn't. And it doesn't get any easier for Liverpool, mind you. If they can beat Manchester United and beat Spurs, then I think they will come in that they certainly are on paper. But that's the great thing about the English Premier League. Anybody can beat anybody. We just had some sort of FA Cup going on at the moment, which is in itself is fascinating. We just, you know, much, much lower teams on the table can play the top sides, which is just great for those clubs. Yeah, but Manchester United, Liverpool are alongside of El Clasico, which is Real Madrid, and Barcelona, it's the biggest, I'd argue it's the biggest sporting, you know, TV events in the world. People go on about Super Bowl. Well, Super Bowl's America. It's got an audience outside of America, but it doesn't, you know, there's people in South America and stuff who will be interested in El Clasico. There are people right around the world in Asia who will take a real interest in the United-Liverpool game. So, you know, they make some of the biggest sporting events in the world, aren't they? And then there's, Liverpool Spurs as well. So, yeah, fascinating month. But, boy, they do play a lot of, playing an awful lot of football. You know, we don't get the rest in rotation, and I'm tired. That sort of worn-out, ridiculous mentality that, you know, we often hear with our rugby players who are just so wrapped up in cotton wool far too much, for my opinion, almost to their own detriment. So that's the nice thing about the English Premier League. Yes, you've got to have depth in your squad, but these players, they get paid a lot. They're expected to play.
Of course, one thing over the break, it was great to see Arch Shelley finally getting recognition in the New Year's honours.
Yep, the great coach of the great John Walker. In fact, growing up as a kid, he lived pretty much in the street right next to me in Mount Albert, Arch Jelly, and a lot of his runners would run from that house, La Vida Avenue. And, everyone goes on about the great Arthur Lydia, which is fair enough, but Arch did a great job with John Walker. And 98 years of age, I spent a bit of time with Arch probably about, MC'd a function about 4 years ago, celebrating Sir John's 40th anniversary of breaking 3:50 for the mile. And it was amazing just how astute, how alive, and just how together Arch Jelly was to somebody who at that point I think was 95 or 96. So, yeah, it's amazing how some people just jump the queue, don't they, in terms of getting knighthoods for things in sport, and yet others, you know, it almost comes at the end of their life and they're almost forgotten. And so it's nice that Arch Jelly did get recognised, but probably should have been recognised a lot long ago. Whole knighthood thing, John sort of still a little bit, I still find the whole system a little bit draconian. There never seems to be a lot of consistency in terms of how they, you know, pick their knights. It sometimes seems a bit of a popularity contest, doesn't it? I mean, it's more than coincidence that most of our knights come through sport or tend to be sort of rugby players or rugby administrators.
It certainly does. Well, I have to say, Mark, it's great to have you back for 2021, and we look forward to you and Sean's discussion next week. And I hope you have the good rest of the week there, Mark.
Yep, not heading down to Taupo on Friday, just doing some live MC work for the New Zealand Open Water Swimming Championships. An event called the Epic, which should be good. A lot of weekend warriors, along with a group of elite men and women, going over 5K, 10K, and also 17K in the water. So something different. But and then a week after that, we've got